Can I just call you PP on the rest of this episode? Pranyansh is too complicated.
That was going to be one of the things I was wondering. How is this going to go? Is it going to be PP? Is it going to be Priyanshi? But
no,
I think most of the world calls me PP. So
really, still?
Yes, in school actually. Even people I work with right now.
They call you PP.
Yeah, it's just somehow stuck, and it's really not the nicest nickname to have.
Well, PP it is going to be.
Cool.
So yeah, thanks for making time. For people tuning in, this is probably not the average guest you would see on the podcast. This is season 3 of Ruben's podcast, and this season is going to be a bit different from everything I've done before. You'll probably hear a lot of people who I went to college or went to Stephens with, but in this season you'll see or hear, I will see and hear if you're watching this on YouTube, a lot of people who I cross paths with in my life beyond college, and one of them is PP. Me and PP met in 2014 at Bain. Both of us, it was our first jobs out of college.
Yeah.
And then we crossed paths continuously. I think through the 5-6 years we were in Gurgaon, and then when's the last time I met you? 5 years?
Oh, wow.
5-6 years ago?
At a wedding, yeah. So about five
Who's
years
wedding?
Ago. Ducky's wedding, I think.
Oh, no. Ducky's wedding, yes.
Yeah.
So that was pre-pandemic. So it has been a while since we were in the same room. In today's episode, we're going to talk about what PP's been up to over the last 10 years. Lots of exciting stuff. Well, I know you're in Bangalore. And how long have you been sort of in Bangalore? And how has Bangalore treated you so far?
Right, I am in Bangalore. I've been in Bangalore for about 5 years now. I came here exactly in March or Feb of 2019. So it's been 5 years. Mm. I've always been someone who's loved Delhi. And when people talk shit about Delhi, that, oh, it's so this, it's so that. I'm the one person who's been like, no, Delhi's my favorite place. I can go live in Gurgaon in a heartbeat. Maybe it's the life we have.
Yeah.
But Bangalore is like really fighting Delhi for that top spot.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm really, really happy here. I'm not going to talk about the weather.
Mm.
And I'm not going to talk about the traffic. I think...
Wait, the weather's bad?
The weather's great. Insanely good. That's the joke.
Oh, yes.
That people in Bangalore are always talking about how the weather's amazing. It's always spring, you know?
Yeah.
There's no summer.
Yeah.
So people don't have ACs in their houses. I don't have my fan on right now. It's like great. No, but Bangalore is really just, the traffic sucks. So weather and traffic is out, but people, dude, it's Bangalore's all about the people, and that's why it's been so good. So just really interesting, different people, and also sometimes really a very identical set of people.
Mm. But what is the identical? What is the stereotype identical person?
Oh, everyone is a fintech startup founder or a tech bro.
Fintech
startup founder who has some kind of a tech inclination, definitely goes to the gym, 100% has raised money from like the three investors that like give everyone money, is most probably sitting out of third wave or one like coffee shop taking interviews. It's like very, you know, it's an outline. So
I see.
Yeah, that's a big, big trait, solid personality in Bangalore.
And is that like very true, or is it still a stereotype which has, you know, outlived its truth?
I don't think it's outlived it yet. Just because it's like, that's the joke, right? If you come up with something, like let's say right now I'm like, hey, I want to eat ice cream, but I want ice cream which has, I don't know, something in it, like vodka in it, for example.
Yeah.
There's probably someone sitting coming up with that startup idea right now.
Mm.
So like every third or fourth person you meet is a founder. And every second person you meet is some kind of an engineer or in the tech space. So it's that way, it is a startup bubble. But if you step out of it a little bit, which I've been a little lucky to do through mostly friends, you also meet very interesting people. Like I've met tattoo artists, I've met people just like doing all kinds of cool things. So,
But
Ghoom Phir Ke startups. So,
what's like social hierarchy? If you're not a founder in Bangalore, are you like uncool?
No, see, that's the thing. Actually, it's good that you mentioned that, because in Bangalore, there's no social hierarchy. So yes, there are some founders who can't stop talking about, you know, oh, I raised this much and I did this and that. But apart from that, which I think is a really small bubble, Bangalore is like a very weirdly equalizing crowd. And what I mean by that is it's very evident from, let's say, if you step out. So if I go to a party or I go to like the fanciest restaurant or the most like local neighborhood bar, what you're wearing doesn't matter. Nobody cares. So you could be super dressed up. No one's going to look twice at you. You could be in a sari. No one cares. You could be in shorts and a t-shirt, but you'll fit in everywhere. And people are usually very respectful. But the other thing, because of this kind of ecosystem, is it's always networking, networking, networking. So at any point, people are like dropping names or, oh yeah, you know this person. Yeah, I know this person. And it's not necessarily because they're trying to one-up you. But it's more like establishing a familiar ground, and actually everyone does know everyone. There's no lag. But a lot of conversations end up being similar. So I think what I've been doing, at least in the last year now, because I've been here for 5 years, in the last year I've put in a lot of effort to meet people outside this bubble. And it's been fun.
And how do you do that?
I actually have this one friend who's, I keep telling him, he's my only friend that I don't discuss work with. Because again, you also know me enough, even if it was 10 years ago, work is a really big part of my identity, right? I do talk about it a lot and what I'm doing and how I'm feeling. So this is my one friend that I don't discuss work with. And I hung out with some of his friends and I've met them like 25, 30 times. They've come for my birthday last year. We fully hung out. And the other day I was just like, wait, what do you all do? I don't even know what you do for work. So, and it was so fun because all we do is, like, at least they do when they hang out, is they play video games, someone will be knitting, and call it getting older, but it's not even like, okay, every time you're getting drunk or you're raging and that's the only idea of fun. So suddenly fun has a new definition and socializing has a new definition, which is nice. I'm quite enjoying it.
So what is a good fun weekend for you look like? It's not raging.
Yeah, No, right now, you know, I'm very off-raging, surprisingly. Yeah, I'm trying to do 100 days of no alcohol. So I'm on day four.
We'll get there. Long way to go.
We'll get there. A good weekend for me. So summer's here. We in my neighborhood, but like, you know how Belvedere was, right?
Yeah.
So we have a little Calcutta group in Bangalore, which is also... We're like always in each other's houses and we live in the same lane. So like last night we had family dinner. It was a potluck. So anyway, one of them has a pool in their house. So summers, usually every weekend between Saturday or Sunday, one afternoon is like 2-3 hours in the pool. You'd probably come home and chill after that. In the evening, if it's a Saturday evening, you might catch a movie at home. We don't really end up going out for movies. Or maybe you'll go for like karaoke. Or there's this one bar which I'm obsessed with, Watson's. It plays fully my kind of music, not Hindi, but like really pop commercial 2010s kind of stuff. So I'll end up there. And then Sunday, Cubbon Park is a lot of fun. Cubbon Park is a really big, very pretty part of Bangalore, which has like a doggy park on Sundays. And then you'll 100% eat idli dosa on Sunday somewhere. So we have a few favorites around here. So 100% there's going to be idli dosa, like breakfast, brunch, whatever. Yeah, and then Sunday evening, if you have the energy, you'll probably like socialize again. But again, it'll be something like tomorrow, for example, I'm meeting someone to work on a website, but not for work, like for fun, like a blog, just. Or dance classes, by the way. That's the other one that I'm really trying to get back to. I used to do salsa classes and I'm trying to do more of that on weekends. So see, different.
Yeah.
Not the same.
I mean, I was just like checking if I'm the only one who's aging faster than I think I should be. They're like, hey, what's your weekend plan? I'm going to like do a podcast. I'll edit it. Yeah. And then I'll go to sleep by like 9:30, 10 maybe. And they're like, oh, why don't you come home? I'm like, can I come by 6 and leave by 10? So I'm in bed by like 11. And I'm like, man, yeah, dude, so like, I'm not even like 40 yet. Like really? But I guess it's... It happens when you're like 20s.
It's right. And here's the really good part about Bangalore. Everything shuts at 12.
Oh, amazing.
So you can't stay out. It's not an option. You have to go home and you have to be asleep by 1. Worst case scenario.
Yeah. Okay. So Bangalore is where you've been 5 years now. We met in Gurgaon many years ago during our time at Bain. You were there for a year, 2 years?
2 years, actually. Yeah, exactly two.
And I remember I had left before you had left, or you were still around?
No, you left about 3-4 months before me. Remember, I was telling you, you did startups before startups were cool.
Because I remember I had right after my farewell that night, I had a gig at some place in GK.
That place we used to go to.
Yeah, I know. Zootish.
Oh my god, it was Zootish.
It was on the rooftop. That was my first gig outside my bedroom, which I think I did too many. It was pretty epic. I remember you and Suhina are showing up. A lot of other people showed up, so it was pretty cool. But from your time at Bain, what's your favorite memory from your time at Bain? You spent 2 years there at the BCC.
You know, it's the other day I actually met my Bain gang, which I think if people who are listening to this know about it, the Hateful Eight. So
the Hateful Eight.
Yeah, a bunch of us met at Shelley's wedding, and we were just sitting and recounting things that happened, okay?
Yeah.
From something that happened at A to T to something that happened during orientation to some case, one person was on a party at Belvedere, the time we left Ahmed. There are a lot of things that we were discussing, and then I remember Ronak was sitting on the side and he just went are you trying to tell me all of this happened in 2 years? Which is somehow we did a lot. I have a lot of favorite memories from Bain, but I think this Hateful Eight group being formed, and I remember Bain used to have rules like more than 25% of the class can't be on leave at the same time, and there were a bunch of rules like that, right? And the eight of us decided that we're going to go to Goa, and dude, we made it happen. And I have a very clear, distinct memory. And we're badasses. So we've decided to take this 6 p.m. flight or 7 p.m. flight, which meant at 4 p.m., all our, what did we have that time? The Skype thingy, whatever we used to use to chat. And on a group chat, we were just should we go? Should we go? And then someone's okay, cool, get up now. And in that tiny office, eight of us got up and started dragging our suitcase. So everyone stopped working because we are just walking in one line. And we walked into the office, and then that was really funny because then everybody in office knew that, okay, they're going to Goa.
Yeah.
And we really put it out there. Yeah. So that was it was really funny. And there are a bunch of other memories also, often involving alcohol, including the time we left Amer. I don't know if you know about this.
No, I do not.
Okay, so there was some Bain party, and this is when we were A1, so I think we really enjoyed alcohol. Yeah, really enjoying alcohol. And as usual, the party was about to end and people had been drinking or whatever, and everyone was like, cool, let's go back to Belvedere. I'm guessing your house, my house, or whatever, C84, I think it was. Whatever. Yeah. So we were supposed to go back to Belvedere, and one by one we've all left, right? The girls, between the eight of us, the girls have found each other. We found Bartla, Donnie, Nishant, everyone, we've gone back to Belvedere and we're raging and everything, and it's fine. It's cool.
Yeah.
Suddenly we realized we don't know where Amer is.
Oh,
and
shit.
The next morning we were like, bro, Amer, where were you? We couldn't find you. We didn't take you. And Amer was livid. How could you leave me and go? And we're just like, dude, we couldn't find you. And he just went did any of you try to call me? We're just oh, wait, yeah. He's I have zero missed calls. So now, even for eight of us, every time we're hanging out, we're is Amer there? Is someone missing?
No.
I mean, that's someone out.
Are the eight of you still in touch with each other?
Yes. Yes, very, very much. Weddings have helped. Because every year, at least one person from the group has got married. So weddings have helped. The girls, honestly, Shelley's in Bangalore, by the way.
Oh, nice.
So I went to Argentina with Gunveen right now. Suhina has become part of my Calcutta group. So the girls are definitely very, very tight. With the boys also, I think we're very, very much in touch. So there's a lot of activity on the groups. There's a lot of pictures and videos being shared from 10 years ago.
Nice. In your voice note, you told me that so you were at that Bain for 2 years. You figured that you felt that you were average at Bain and you would always stay average at Bain. And that was a big reason to leave. At what point did you figure, or do you remember the moment where you realized that I'm just average at Bain?
Yeah, I still remember the moment, and it was a very scientific reason. Because I got that, what is it called, that whatever review thing that used to happen twice in a year. And the first year, everyone had told us that, yeah, you know, it's okay to get a 3. Mostly everyone gets a 3, it's fine. But I still remember once I'd become an A2, and then the first review that I had, I thought I had killed it. Okay, because I still remember we'd set up that one entire new function. It was just Prakriti and me, and I had worked really, really hard, and I was really proud of my work. I thought I did a really good job. And at that point, I'm an A2 and I'm talking to like the end, whatever, front end consultants and stuff. And then I still got a 3. And that was when I realized that, you know what, if this is my peak, like, because I knew I can't possibly do better than this. Like, I realized that this is my, like, best. And if my best is going to mean this, and sure, there were actually, like, in hindsight, multiple reasons why that happens. And also, like, that's really not a judge of my, like, capabilities. Fine.
Yeah.
But in that moment, you know, it's your first job. And there's so much competition and comparison. And I often say this, I think Bain hires very similar people. Like, we are unique, sure. But as a personality type, everyone's very similar. So then when you hear and people discuss, right? So you're just like, okay, that person's got a 4. That person's got a 4. My time, though, someone has, Amir has gone and got a 5 also. So and I was like, are you serious? So that honestly broke my heart. Like, I think that was because, again, I'm also someone, and Bain is full of people like this, someone who's always been an overachiever, always been top of their class in school, in college, in anything I've done. So that was my first like reality check that, okay, I'm not the best. And then I was like, okay, now what do we want to do about this? Do I want to sit for these NDC interviews and then, you know, get rejected? I was just like, I don't want to risk it. It's something I don't want to face. So what are my alternates? You know, where can I go and win? And that's how my B school happened.
You said that you had this need to be in the top 1% in whatever you do. Is that still the case? Yeah. Do you still believe that?
1,000%. Like,
why?
And the thing is, because like I was saying, I think I draw a lot of my identity and self-worth from what I do. But it's changed over time. So while I have to be the best in what I do. Okay. I don't like being average, but that doesn't mean I'm not willing to learn or spend time trying to get better. But as long as I feel like, okay, eventually I will get good at this. For example, I used to do partnerships at some point and I realized I don't like it. So I'm not going to be good at it. So let me drop that. On the other hand, when I was a product manager, that's not something I was very good at from the beginning. In the middle, I became really, really good at it. Then I'm not. But the biggest change about this whole be the top 1% is now it's very like intrinsically driven and not external validation, like a number. So it's very for me. Like if I feel like, wow, this is a very cool idea, or wow, did I just do this like so fast? That's good enough. So it's kind of working now.
Okay. So that was sort of the big driver. I know like a lot of people, I think sort of went through similar kind of experiences where you were just like, oh, I'm a 3, I'm a 4, what is a 5? And for people who are not familiar, every six months, there used to be like review cycles and you were rated on a scale of 1 to 5. 5 were like, you were exceptional. Maybe, you know, people would not get that much. Or it was very rare for somebody to get a 5. And on average, you know, if you got a 4, that means you were doing well. 3 by definition meant you were meeting expectations, but that apparently was not good enough. I think Bain did a pretty good job at hiring like the same kind of genre of people. Some of them are still at Bain. Do you know people from your batch who are still at Bain?
Of course, half of Hateful Eight is still at Bain.
Half of Hateful Eight is still at Bain.
I mean, so Suhina's still there, Gunveen is still there, Bartla's still there, and Donnie's still there. So 4. Wow. Still at Bain.
That's quite crazy, right? The first job, I know, and they're still at their first job.
I know.
I mean, I don't know how. Yeah, Chuck is still at Bain.
Exactly. Chuck is still there. The entire that building in Chicago, dude. Like we know all of them. They're still at Bain.
10 years later.
So, Belvedere in Chicago.
Yeah, but I mean, like they are like. They're almost at the top of the ladder, right?
Which yeah.
Everybody sort of aspired, so same.
I mean, I envy the familiarity that they get to operate in because a lot of things in their life are very predictable and very linear. But I also find it funny when, you know, they'll discuss with me that, oh, I have to make this presentation and it's not a Bain presentation. I have no idea how to do it without that tool kit.
Oh, yeah.
So they like go crazy if things are not gray and red.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
I mean, like at least now at my company, when we do have to make slides once in a way, I do get crazy when things are not like left aligned and you know very very clear. So that like people must be wondering like what disease does Ruben have to care about all this formatting stuff?
No, Wayne did a great job in making us very particular about that. It's like ingrained.
Yeah, I do sometimes wonder though. Like, I think like. The ability to be very structured, the ability to write good emails, the ability to, you know, like break down a problem. I feel like being taught us a little bit. Sometimes I do wonder what other skills that we could have learned if we stayed on at Bain. I don't know.
And who's to
know? And I think people who are at Bain probably don't realize it only once they have left Bain and they're like, oh, wow, I can do this thing really, really well because I maybe learned at Bain. So, yeah, that's always like a question mark on. I'm sure they're like, if you became like manager and things like that, you would have learned some other stuff, but who should know what that would be?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was Bain. You were there for 2 years, you left, and then you went on to study Mica. You went there because you were fascinated about advertising. You said in your note that you just like getting attention. So you wanted to work in advertising.
Yeah.
You started working in ad. Did you ever work in an ad agency?
No. Okay. So here's the thing. Like, it was a very interesting journey. I didn't work in an ad agency. I did intern during college at DDB Mutra, but I never worked at an ad agency. So what happened is, when I was younger, I was always fascinated with ads. But mostly everyone is, right? Like, there's like a fun jingle and there's a celebrity. So you kind of get fascinated. But one of my cousins was at Mica on her way to becoming a pretty big name in the marketing world. And through that, I was like, okay, I want to do ads. And Bain, honestly, was a little bit of a deviation from that route because English at LSR was also so that I could go into marketing. Like a lot of decisions were on the road to marketing and advertising. Landed up at Mica, the first reality check I got was how people at ad agencies get paid the amount of money. And I was like, hell no, that's not happening.
And just to compare, like, how was this comparing against, say, what you were last paid at Bain? Was it like a 50% reduction or like 90% reduction?
I won't say 50, but like maybe a good 30-40% reduction. So get it, like I left Bain at a certain level and post MBA, I would be at a lower level 2 years later.
Got it.
So, A, the money aspect and B, the culture. So, while I'd heard about it and I'm someone who always takes things like culture, like I discount it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's not science. Okay, I'm a very like logical, like, it has to be facts and science. And I'm like, culture is bad. Aise bolte hai. For someone it's good, for someone it's bad. But once I actually started talking to people and hearing about the way things were run, I was just like, okay, this is not happening. Interestingly,
tell me a story. Tell me one of the stories you heard which freaked you out.
No, it was actually just the way people were spoken to, you know. And what was bothering me was that it was an accepted norm. No one was saying this is wrong. It was like a joke. Oh, ha ha ha! Of course, your senior came and told you you're good for nothing and you're never gonna get anywhere. Of course, you know, they use your idea, but like didn't give you credit for it. Haha, this though happens in ad agencies. Yeah, it's completely normal. Of course, you're going to be working in the middle of the night and give like creative ideas. So it's like the myth started dissolving. And then we had this one talk by someone from Star. And she came and she spoke. This is all at my class. So she came and spoke about how they launched the Pro Kabaddi League.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated. Because you know what? I suddenly realized all these things that we watch and love, like whether it was Indian Idol growing up or some other show, someone's done a lot of research to decide what it should be. So when she spoke about the Pro Kabaddi League, she told us about how they decided the sport first, and then which states or locations to build the teams from, and just the entire math behind it, the logic behind it. And I was like, wow, I want to do that. So then it turned into, I want to do media and I want to do reality shows, which by the way, is still a dream I have to somehow, you know, do. Netflix has such cool reality shows. Why can't we do like Too Hot to Handle or Love is Blind in India? Come on, with arranged marriages, like best option ever. So that became like my dream, that I want to become a TV show producer. And then I started down a media like path. So post Mike, I worked in a media company.
Got it. Got it. So you never ended up working at an agency, but you'd heard all these stories, and through Micah, you were like, okay, maybe not actual agency, but I want to work on, basically conceptualizing and coming up with these shows.
Ideas. Yeah.
Let's talk about reality show. You want to be a producer of reality show. I think, in my personal opinion, reality shows are just garbage for the mind. Do you agree or not? And then
Absolutely.
If you agree,
it's why the fuck do you want to produce?
Why do you want to create more of that shit?
Okay, I'll tell you why. Is it garbage for the mind? Is it trashy TV? Yes. Is it your cheap thrill? Yes. But that's the point of it. They say, right? Like, that, like TV or entertainment now is supposed to be an escape from reality. Like, what do you do on Instagram looking at reels of... that? Yesterday, I was watching some reel where some big machine is coming in crushing bottles and things. Then you'll watch another reel of babies are falling down and getting hurt. Then you'll it's the same thing, right? Except there's more structure to it and there's probably a longer storyline. So the point is, it's meant for entertainment. No one who's watching reality shows thinks they're watching something educative or informative, or I'm going to learn something. They're doing it because they want to be like, oh my God, that person's so stupid. And it somehow... because we're all narcissistic and in a lot of ways, it makes you feel good about yourself and how suddenly your life is great because uska life, dekho, it's, you know, they're crying at something so stupid. A, that. And
but
B,
things like Love is Blind and all, it's all like hot people on the screen. How does that make you feel better? I don't think that makes you feel better.
Because the hot person is also getting rejected. Get it? Unka life may be problem hai. So eventually it's like, okay, everyone's life sucks. And this person who, you know, in the beginning, you're like, wow, they're so hot. Oh my God, she's just 24 and she's like a marketing manager or whatever. And then suddenly things don't work out, or they work out. In which case, maybe you'll have some hope and all. But by the end of it, net, it's just gossip. It's everyone likes to know about other people's lives. And this is such a guilt-free way to do it. Yeah. Where these people are like, yeah, come, you know, enjoy. Like, I love those shows where the girlfriend tries to check if the boyfriend is cheating on a reality show. It's wild. But I love it. And I know half of it is scripted. But still, I love it. Like, the fact that we all know that this is a lie and this is useless, but we're still indulging in it, makes it fascinating.
Yeah. So interesting. For very, very, very later in life did I realize that WWE was all like a big fucking theater show. And then I was like, what the fuck? Like, how did they get us to like buy in so deeply to it? It was all scripted. And then, of course, like in Singapore, they had a small version of it, like live. And it was like, that was put out as like comedy. Like, it was like, and of course, there was a little bit of fighting and all of that. But then when you look at it with the view of, oh, this is just a big comic theater. Okay. But like when I was like growing up, they had those trump cards and people took it so seriously. All lies. These are all lies. I don't know. I know a lot of friends of mine who are like obsessed. And nobody sort of like will ever kid themselves this serious. But I'm just like, you have 24 hours a day. You're spending 1 hour watching this bullshit. I mean, I also watch Netflix. I'm not saying I only watch fucking educational shit. I like watching like crap, but... yeah, I don't know. I just don't get the other.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like everyone's idea of crap and escape is just different. So everyone has some shit that they do. For example, like for me, Twitter is stupid. get it. Like, I think it's stupid, but that's a very, it's just my personality. And like, I don't understand why you'd say something in like that, like in a, such a short sentence.
Yeah.
I think it's stupid, but it's clearly doing really well. So similarly, like if it's reality TV for someone, it's reality. And it's funny that you mentioned you have 24 hours in a day and why you want to spend 1 hour doing this, because it's something I've been thinking about a lot. That does every hour have to be like classified in the good bucket? You know what I mean? Like, I was productive, or I learned something. Or first, though, there was, thanks to the pandemic, all of us were trying to learn something at any point in the day. So that all work out. And then I at least went into, okay, but let me not waste my time. But now I'm very comfortable wasting my time. You know, it's okay. I will do something where I'm doing nothing. Or even if nothing means I'm watching Love is Blind, it's fine. It's
and
cool.
What changed? Why do you feel that way?
Therapy. But no, it was a lot of therapy. No, I think for me...
This is a great time to talk about our sponsor of this episode. So-and-so, Edge of PP's therapist name. If you would like to get in touch, here's the number.
She's been great, but I think it was...
Actually, when you just said that, for fun, I don't ever, like, I don't know, but I'm like, who sponsored this episode, right? And then I realized maybe therapists are the best sponsor for Ruben's podcast.
I agree. I completely agree, because everything I'm telling you, like, now it's coming across with such coherence and clarity. And like we were talking about it, right? On our episode, one of the things that really struck me is when she said something like, wow, you make it sound like it was such a thought out decision, everything I've done in 10 years, when it was random. But what changed for me was, I think the, again, we'll come to it, but once I started working for myself, I needed to have that time where I'm not working and I'm not feeling, because at any point I have something to do. And if I don't do it, it's a very direct impact on my life, my income, my everything. So it's, again, I'm working on it, not the best at it, but figuring it out.
Okay. Interesting. Is Twitter very big in Bangalore these days? Everybody's tweeting.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's not tweeting, man. Everyone's quoting tweets. That's the problem. Did you see this person's tweet? Did you see that person's tweet? And in the middle, I indulged in it. Okay, I tried. Because, I mean, of course, with my job being in marketing, and plus, I was just trying to see how much of a personal brand can I build. Instagram has worked. LinkedIn, thankfully, is working really well. But Twitter, I failed also. I think I just don't get it.
I don't get Twitter. I don't understand why would you get to a point wherein you just write something you're thinking. I mean, I can get it if you're trying to sell something or you're trying to build a quote-unquote personal brand, which I want to get to in a second. But yeah, like, I never got the point of, like, tweeting. Like, I would I really like telling maybe the 100 people I know. Like, I would like to tell them about things I've been doing just because I would like to read about what they're doing, right? And not in a showy off manner, but just like, you know, if I haven't spoken to somebody in like a year, I don't mind seeing a picture of them going to Greece or a picture of them going to their gym, right? I mean, they were cool. But I don't want to know this is random, like a random person on the street. Like, I actually don't care. And like, why would I just randomly put out a tweet? I really think like personal newsletters would be really, really...
Oh my
like
God,
if everybody writes a personal newsletter and sends it out to like their group of 25 friends, I would like subscribe to all my friends' newsletter. If they commit to like putting in the effort of writing it once a month, you know what's been up in life? You know what's up in life? What's up with work? If they need help on anything? Maybe five pictures of what they've been doing? I would read that shit. But
We actually did that. Post-college, two of my friends, Sakshi and Arushi, because Sakshi was going to another country. Arushi and I were going to be in the same city, but that was still like, you know, oh no, Arushi also eventually went to Chennai, whatever. So we weren't in the same space. So the three of us started this thing of sending emails every like week or 2 weeks. And I still have the entire bookmark on my Gmail, and it's so nice to go back to it. But it was exactly this. Oh, I've made a new friend. Oh, I met this boy. Oh, college sucks. This is a very interesting paper I wrote. This happened today at work. But like, we should make this happen. Like, I agree. I'd subscribe to it for sure.
It's wonderful, right? Hopefully, I'm not going to sort of plug in, but I do have a newsletter, which I'm trying to make it into that. So if you would like to subscribe, you can subscribe.
Everyone.
Sorry, so
like, share, and subscribe.
Twitter. Yeah, like, share, yeah. Subscribe. We're talking about Twitter. Personal brand. You hit another another chord, another vein. What's this deal about personal brand? Like, conceptually, I understand why it is important. And I remember me and Louis talking about this, also is a self-realization thing. We see things on Twitter or LinkedIn, we cringe. And the reason we cringe because deep down we are jealous that we are not doing it. Or
exactly.
We feel bad that you're not doing it. So explain to me how are you thinking about this personal brand thing? What does good look like? And how do you stop yourself from feeling like, oh my God, what a fucking self-obsessed narcissist I am. And I'm just talking about all the good shit. And who the fuck should care about my good shit?
Exactly. Okay. I'm going to go back to something you mentioned earlier that I'd actually told you, which is I love attention. Okay. Now, while growing up, or even till like my early 20s or mid 20s, it's something about myself that was, in a way, like seemingly judged by other people or even judged by myself. Dude, why do you want so much attention? Why are you so desperate? You just this, you just that. Funnily enough, it's something that now I accept about myself and I love about myself. And I think that's what's making me good at my job. That's what's actually made me get into this whole personal branding concept, right?
Mm.
Now, and the thing is, different people do it for different reasons. For some people, it's because they actually want to make a career out of it, right? Like someone would end up becoming an influencer. Some people would do it because they genuinely feel like they have so much to say. Narcissistic or not, but they feel like I have so many smart things to say, I should put it out there. The third type of people will be the people who are doing it in some way to tangentially benefit their career, which could be everyone from a Kunal Shah to like a Ankur Varikut or whatever.
Yes,
it's like, so I think I operate somewhere in the second and third bucket where I genuinely sometimes feel like I'm so smart, this was such a cool thought. Okay, so it's like, I want to tell people. And it's embarrassing or awkward to like text it to your friends, right? Hey, did you think this is cool? Putting it out there into the universe and letting the universe react to it. And then when you suddenly see those numbers shifting, right? Like the likes are coming, the replies are coming, the concept. It's another kind of an adrenaline hit. And it's not like I'm some big influencer. I have what, 1,000 followers on Instagram and some 5,000 on LinkedIn. But that one time, for example, this one time, one LinkedIn post of mine went viral. So to speak. What is even virality, but let's call it viral.
Yeah.
It got like some 1,200 or 1,300 likes and 30 people had shared it and something. And I was just like, I've arrived in life. I am now the smartest person. But the third reason, which is to tangentially benefit your career, at least in my case right now, because I'm working for myself, and I don't know what I'm doing and I'm just trying to figure it out. I've decided that I need to be relevant and I need people to remember me. I can't like disappear from their memory. So that if I reach out and say, hey, I need help, or do you know someone who can help me with XYZ, they like respond. And B, because sometimes they reach out to me and say, hey, I need help in this. But I'm loving it because sure, LinkedIn, I'm putting in more professional effort. So I try to be a certain way there. Instagram, I was just having fun with. But it's so cool in the last 6-8 months. And again, I know it's going to sound very obnoxious and narcissistic. I've actually had very random people, like my friend's wife or some junior from college. Random people telling me, hey, I'm loving your Instagram stories, man. Keep it coming. Hey, you're in Argentina. What else is happening? Oh, dude, like, we're invested. Did you sell your sofa or not? Like, when I was trying to sell my sofa, everyone was, like, with me. So it's fun. And now it's become going into that zone of personal branding or whatever. But what I'm trying to get at is the objective doesn't always have to be I want to get a million followers and thing. It's like, this is the version of myself I want to put out there. And it's fun.
So, do you like plan like, oh, I'm going to write 5 posts a day, I'm going to do 3 reels a day or 3 reels a week? Like, do you plan that shit out?
No, I don't. It took me a long time to not plan because I am a planner max. But I've decided to let that aspect be a little bit more like flowy and as and when it comes. But I do like, you know, if something like last night I had people over for dinner And I randomly came up with like two ideas of things I want to write about. So I like ran to my room. On my mirror, there are a bunch of sticky notes of the topics. So I quickly like wrote it down so I don't forget. So I do that, but I don't schedule it or plan it, oh, Saturday for posting, because again, I'm not the first bucket. If you're the first bucket where you're like, I need to become an influencer, I need XYZ, like this is the primary, then you maybe think like that. Right now, I'm not that person.
Interesting.
But it works.
I mean, we can talk at length at this on like, what does it mean to be an influencer? And like, why would you want to be like, if the influencer means you have a lot of people and you get paid for just saying something, I'm just like,
but don't you think it's
like,
about
why would you want to take that burden on your shoulders, right? Like,
okay, you're calling it a burden. I look at it as power. I mean, the fact that you have a million people who you can reach like that. Sure, okay, a million may not look at your stories, even if 100,000 do, and you can say something to them. That's so powerful. You have so much power. So, I mean, and there are all sorts of ways around it. You know, I've been following this girl recently. She's calling herself a faceless influencer. So she does affiliate marketing, but she's like just never putting her face on it. Great. Matlab, dude, the other day there was someone, there's a handle on Instagram of a guy who cooks while he has two beagles sitting next to him. Cooking with beagles. That's content. So everything can be content. And I think that's wild and it's so interesting and there's so much you can do with it. It obviously has its issues, but that's why I'm in the space that I'm in, like this whole marketing, branding. See, it's all coming together. I like attention. I want to be creative. Ads, media, reality. It's all coming together in this like marketing domain now. So I'm happy. It seems to be figuring itself out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so many things. Yeah, it's, I think, a bunch of things. I think there is value of having a personal brand. I think there is value in, you know, figuring out ways to get people's attention. I won't say get people's attention, but like, I think that is very negative. Like, I hate that. If you're trying to get my attention, like, I hate that. Like, don't try to get my attention. Like, make me want to pay attention to you. Versus trying to snatch my attention. Like those fucking LinkedIn posts, which, you know, they'll stop halfway and then you got to press see more.
Click to read,
Now I'm just like, unfollow this person. If you're trying to trap me into your fucking, like, don't try to trap me. Like, if you do genuine stuff, I will like there are some podcasts wherein I will literally go and like hit that bell notification because I want to know when you're going to say something next because I really, like, you've earned my trust. But if you're trying to trap me in shit, maybe just say that's to be one, whatever. It's a touchy thing for me, but anyway, let's park that topic. We can go on and on. Let's talk about the next exciting clickbaity. Oh, you worked with Cred at Kunal Shah's company.
Oh my god!
Rumors podcast is going to get some views because of this. What do you hate about Kunal Shah? And fuck, I'm not going to ask you that. Okay, I do want to talk about Cred. The main reason being is I used to work at Zilingo. In the news for all the right reasons for some time and then in the news for all the wrong reasons in the other time. I don't want to talk about good stuff at Cred. I think, you know, you can read the news for it. Because you've been sort of in the inside and worked there, I want to know what challenges or what it is, what it really looks like inside the rocket ship. So how did you get to Cred? You were working at Bark right after, you know, Micah. You were, you know, whatever, you didn't really love it. Bombay was not the best place. You're one of the few people who said you hated Bombay at that time.
I hated Bombay. Still do.
So, still do?
I'm not the biggest Bombay fan, but that can be a podcast in itself, I think.
That can be a podcast in itself. But talk to me about what was happening those days. You were at Bark. Sunday, you get a call. And you hear that this guy called Kunal Shah is going to start this company and do you want to join? Talk to me about that story.
So it was, I don't know if you remember Ronika, but Ronika was someone that I knew through Aman from SRCC. And it just happened that Ronika ended up at Mica at the same time that I did. So we used to hang a bunch and chat a bunch and all of that. And she went and she was like one of the top performing, like brightest people in the batch, but also like the most approachable, sweet, all of that. It was a very nice combination. So now I was at Bark and I realized like this is not flying. I'm really like miserable. And I was very softly like looking at other companies, but still in the media space. So out of the blue, Ronika called me and she's like, hey, look, I know you want to do media, but here's a job and here's a company. And I feel like you're going to be great at it. So do you want to just consider it? Do you think I can convince you to consider it? And this is in like December of 2018. And I said no, because at that point, startups, like what are startups, dude? Who works at a startup? It sounds so risky.
This is 2018 December,
and I'm still not someone who's very like I want to take a risk and all of that.
Yeah,
you know, I want a linear and Bain made life so structured and familiar. I was like, this is what I want. And the second thing was, I didn't know who Kunal Shah was, so I was like, okay. She's like, oh, you know, it's Kunal Shah's next. Kunal Shah's next. She's continuously saying Kunal Shah's next. I'm like, who is this man? So I'm like Googling, trying to figure out why is this name. And at that point, he wasn't obviously like as big as he is today. So yeah, now what happened effectively is when she spoke to me, I was like, you know what, fine, let's just talk. And to be very honest with you, I wanted to get out of Bombay. And this was a great way to do that. I said, fine, whatever, I'll just chat. And this at this point, Cred had like maybe 30 people, 40 people. So it was still really, really small. And I ended up doing a couple of like interview calls with 2-3 people. And all those calls, like they were their own story. Like one guy I spoke to, so my building in Bombay, Bhakti Park, had no network ever. So I was like running around in the gym talking to him. And then another guy, I gave the interview from the parking lot of the Bark office. So I was doing shit like that. And finally, I met Kunal. Okay, so for the last time. Actually, no, I feel like I flew to Bangalore, met them in person and stuff. Then I met Kunal. And I think my life changed when I met him. Like, what a man, dude. What a guy. So the entire conversation with him just blew my mind. I didn't know people could think. So, like, it was so refreshing to have a conversation.
Well, what did he say to you?
My conversation, my interview with Kunal was about how could I break up with someone and then start dating them again 6 months later, and what does that say about my personality? That was my interview with him.
What was
like
the answer?
We had a full deconstruction of my personality about why have you gone back to this guy. And I don't even remember how it came up. It came up in some very random point. And then before I knew it, we were like deep in conversation about this. And yeah, so that's what we discussed. And I was just like, wow, dude, like he's having this chat with me and this is so much fun. And and here's again, I know you said you don't want to discuss good things about Cred or stuff, but I have to say, one of the questions I asked him when he was interviewing me was, how do you know that a startup's not a startup anymore? You know, like, why are they still calling Amazon a startup? For me, it was a very I didn't ask this trying to sound smart. I was just like, I don't know. At what point am I not working in a startup? Cut to 4 years later when I'm leaving Cred and I've gone into his room to say my goodbyes and, you know, have a little chat. And while I was walking and I was like, oh, Kunal, I don't know if you remember, I'd asked you a question. He's like, yeah, you asked me why startups, when startups stop being startups, and this is my answer. And I was like, okay, so where do you think Cred is? And he gave me an answer. And I was just like, wow. So, I mean, all said and done, the company, sure, we can talk about, but like as a man, like I'm a big fan. So there's something about him.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would contest that. What was Cred when you were joining? Like what did they sell you? What was the big plan? And then I also want to, the reason I'm asking that is I'm very curious. I know,
yeah,
and sort of through whatever Ankiti,
yeah,
I had we knew them a little bit,
yeah,
so I know what the sort of in theory what the thing is, but I want to know from you on what is on day one, where is it today, and where do you think?
Yeah. So here's the funny thing, right? I've realized this about myself. When I'm trying to work at a company or for a company even right now, I don't really judge the company's business model. Get it? Like, unless it's something I completely don't believe in. Like, if I think that this is the most random thing, like it has to be truly bizarre and random then I'll say, ki, okay, I don't want to go here.
Yeah.
But if I'm convinced that, okay, this leader knows what they're doing, the people around me seem nice and smart, like they're top quality talent, I will work for them. So okay. With CRED also, I think for the longest time, I didn't even know, okay, this is the like the long-term business model, or this is how we'll make money. This is, and there used to be a lot of these all hands where they would discuss, like, you know, this is how our financials will grow. And I couldn't keep up with any of it. I was just like, I don't care. Like, I'm enjoying life, you know. I come to office in shorts and I get good food and I go for offsites to Goa. I have a MacBook. Like, life is awesome. But for me, the main thing, I don't think I realized it before joining. Before joining, it was honestly the vibe, everyone's vibe. I thought everybody thought differently. Everyone I spoke to. So that was really, really cool. Like, no one was giving me, no one asked me, tell me about yourself, you know. My interview question, I still remember one, Trupti, again, love her. She asked me in my interview that if you had a big machine that could pick something up from Earth and throw it out into space, what would you throw? It can be a thought, a person, or whatever you want. What will you throw? So this is what I mean, right? Like, I was like, wow, my mind is expanding. So that's what drew me to CRED.
Sorry, what did you answer to that?
My answer. So first I said, I'll throw out sexism, like anyone who's like creating inequality. Then she said, okay, if you had to throw out something tangible. At that point, Trump had just become president. So I said, I'll throw Trump out.
Okay. So it was super smart people expanding it.
And ownership. Yeah. Sorry, that was the last thing I was going to say. Like, once I got into it, the fact that it was like a do it now. You have a cool idea. No one's judging, oh, this is a good idea, a bad idea, here's why it won't work or whatever. You were, even as a so-called junior person, there was a lot of equality in the way you were spoken to, the way your ideas were discussed. Yeah. And like, yeah, do it. You want like 1 crore for this event, take it. You know? So it was great.
Yeah.
A lot of freedom.
Maybe on that one, because I saw a little bit of this in my previous company. Do you think that's a good thing? Like, just having tons of money and like, no, like, just do whatever you want. Like money's not a problem.
Yeah.
Now through the CRED experience, like,
I think, what do you think of that? I think it's in phases. So, for example, the way CRED did it, I'm actually okay with it. The fact that they chose to spend that much money on advertising or marketing or whatever, I think it's a good thing, because all said and done, whatever you're building, you have to be able to sell it. And by the end of it, I think everyone has to build a brand. So CRED managed to do that, right? Like, that's what matters by the end of the day. And again, because I'm me, business model, will you make money, not make money? All of that for me is secondary, because again, I'm going back to the same thing. If you've managed to build a brand like that, you again have a lot of power, right? So I think it's good, like, I don't complain about it. But yeah, sure.
Interesting.
Eventually, you want to become a little bit smarter about where you're spending your money.
Yeah. Got it.
Very
So people who don't know CRED, and it's probably like, you should just go Google it and read it. But CRED essentially is this. It's essentially like a service which started off as a way to pay credit cards and get points. And you can get points to buy a lot of good stuff. Now it's expanded to many more things. I think the eventual vision is to serve India's top 1%. Like Kunal has said this many times, that the only money you will make in India is something in the top 1%.
Yep.
I think if you look at India's top 1%, average per capita GDP is maybe comparable to Singapore. And that's sort of where the money is. So maybe since you've worked there, paint me like bear case. How does CRED fail it at its vision of doing what it's trying to do?
I think it's going to be
trying
to.
Why would it not happen?
Yeah. Okay. So here are the things that are definitely going for CRED. The fact that the talent quality is really, really good. So like, insisting on perfect work, insisting on everything being awesome and just right. If I have to kind of predict this, for me, it would just be two things. Like, A, either you try to do too much. Where it's just like, okay, what's going on? Even right now, there's a lot of stuff happening on the app, and versus earlier where it was like a very direct use case. So maybe just trying to do too much and not knowing which one is supposed to work out for you. And I think The second one will be just this, like, you've kind of spoiled everyone and made everyone very entitled. And we used to discuss this at CRED also a lot, that everyone wants to walk around, oh my God, CRED coins are now useless. I don't know what to do with it. So there's a certain level of entitlement, and that kind of happens, right? And then suddenly one day the bubble bursts where people aren't as fascinated with you anymore. Because CRED is now trying to do things which are a little bit more utility and like fun, like now they have a UP, like Scan and Pay or things like that. It might still survive through it. But yeah, probably like doing too many things and trying to get everything perfect. And then like, nahi chal raha, burn kar do. You know, there's a little bit of that mentality. Otherwise, yeah, as a brand, it's made a mark. So, no denying that.
Fascinating. Do you think Kunal will start another company after CRED?
I really hope so. Because I want to go work for him again. So, I really hope he does. But, I mean, there's a lot going on with CRED right now. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
Nice. Okay, I would strongly recommend people, if you've not heard Kunal and stuff he talks about, the CRED has a pretty amazing podcast called CRED Curious, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah,
they do some pretty good stuff. Kunal has a bunch of podcasts. I would strongly recommend to check it out.
And he tweets a lot.
He has some pretty intense tweet bombs. But after reading not only Kunal, but a bunch of other 20, I'll read like 50 tweet bombs. And then at the end of the day, I feel shit about myself. And I'm like, I mean, this is almost like the big butts on Instagram. It's the Twitter version of it, where you feel like you're getting a bit smarter, but I don't know. But yeah, he exactly. I think he has a very interesting, a bit too honest take on humans and how we are just basically monkeys. And you can just like program humans to the T. But a lot of it is true. I agree.
Can I give you one example though on that note, because you brought it up. So we have this concept called an RCA. I don't know if it's like a global concept, but like if something goes wrong, you do a root cause analysis and you make a document, right? And a lot of things were going wrong at CRED, like one after the other. And people just won't put out like proper RCAs and you won't really figure out what happened. So it would happen again. Kunal started this thing where the best RCA of the month got 25,000 rupees. And all of a sudden, everyone's writing RCAs. So that's what I think people, like, it's a great way to get people to do what needs to be done. And he's cracked it, like that kind of I think he's cracked that code.
He's pretty good. Even the stuff like he talks about, like Delta 4 and people do not pay for convenience and something about like status. It's like, it's so amazing to see. Like, I don't know if people, maybe it was just because now of the internet and these things are easily accessible. Like, maybe there were people like when we were like 12, 13, 15 who also thought similar, but they just couldn't reach the millions. But it is pretty amazing to see that. Okay, so when you were at CRED, you were a product manager, the quintessential, highly desired role of a product manager. There is another podcast, PP talks about how being a PM is like being a politician, which I would recommend you guys should check out. It's pretty interesting. I will not go into that again. But in your note to me, you said that at some point you reached, you did the CRED store, which was like the peak of your PM career. You were coordinating with about like 1,000 people through COVID. Nobody reported to you, and yet you managed to launch the CRED store.
Not 1,000.
100 people. 100. I mean, just another zero. You managed to get that done. The CRED show for people, and correct me if I'm wrong, was basically a place wherein you, when you collected these coins, you could essentially go and buy products. And I think for brands, this was a, like a new way to distribute to a very affluent class of people. So very interesting concept. I generally thought that was sort of the genius part of CRED. Everything else, I'm still trying to keep up. At some point after that, you asked yourself, if you wanted to be a PM, if you wanted to be in startups, and if you wanted to be in fintech, I don't ask myself the PM question, but I often ask myself, do I want to be in startups and do I want to be in fintech? I'm curious to know what your answers to those questions were, and how that sort of led you to leave CRED and do what you're doing now.
I think the answer was I don't want to be a PM. I think I figured that out. I think I really enjoyed it for the 2-3 years that I was doing it. But as more and more and more people started doing it, the expectations and just the way it's kind of defined wasn't really working for me. I think the company and the culture and the company and the vibe and all of that itself made a big difference to me in joining that PM role, which I know is true for any kind of a role, but most other roles are still somewhat well-defined, right? Like if you're in the finance team or you're in the HR team or you're a category lead or you're a brand manager, there's still a little bit of an outline of what you do and what your life looks like. Being a product manager, this role didn't exist like 10, 15 years ago, right? So, and suddenly it's everywhere. So actually what happens in different companies is very different. Which is why the first thing I did when I left grad was I was like, okay, I'm going to go be a PM in a different company and see if I still enjoy it. And I didn't. Because all of a sudden, a lot of the things which I had very easily at cred, like great design, great engineers, money is not a problem. All of that was taken away. Some other stuff came as positives, but that didn't work. So being a product manager is something I'm not enjoying anymore. I don't think I get to be as creative as I like to be, and as different, and a lot of outside cred, most companies don't want that. They don't want a very tangential solution. They want a little bit more of a straightforward solution. Do I want to be in fintech? No, I don't think so. But what's happening is that because of what is available on my CV and my background, XYZ, people look at cred and it's immediately like, oh, you know fintech. And I have to tell them that, hey, look at cred. I was doing cred store, which is D2C. It's e-commerce. If you're going to come to me and start talking about like wealth management products, I don't know what's going to happen. But I started to kind of embrace it a little bit. So even right now with what I do, about 4 to 5 of my clients are fintech or finance related, which is fine. Now I'm just like, okay, let me like build on it. And one of them I'm having a lot of fun with also because I'm understanding how taxes work and how it affects your CTC and things. So fintech, I don't want to do it, but it's not leaving me. So now I'm embracing it. Do I want to be in startups? Hell yeah. Like absolutely do not want to leave this space. I think I like the change and it's probably like I'm sounding so like delusional about it right now because I've always been such an organized and structured person who doesn't like chaos, who doesn't like uncertainty. All of a sudden in the last year or two, I've become okay with not knowing what's going to happen or okay with something being decided today and changing tomorrow. So it's all like a new, like refreshing approach to life almost. So I'm like, this is great. And I love startups for that. I love the fact that today could be X and tomorrow, not even Y, tomorrow can be like 1, 2, 3, like utna change ho gaya. So yeah, more freedom, more flexibility, more like bolder decisions. And that's what cred taught me. Like if Bain taught me organization and structure, cred taught me like take a bold decision, make it happen. So now I can do that in startups.
So then why did you decide to leave cred? Just because you wanted to figure out what PM outside cred looks like?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, see, the thing with cred is I genuinely feel I peaked with the cred store. Okay, so that was my 5 ratings at cred. Yeah. I mean, not in actual numbers. Yeah, not in actual numbers, but that was like everybody in the company knew me. Anything to do with cred store, it was like PP, 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 you know. My product hasn't got delivered, someone's tagging me. The app is getting stuck, they're tagging me. They want to onboard a new brand, they have an idea for a sale. Everything was PP and I loved that. I loved
it. Did you get a big bonus at the end of it from Kunal?
So I got a shit ton of ESOP, so no complaints there.
But, nice.
But basically, I think what happened after that is it became such a big beast in itself that as a company they had to do what was right for the company, which is bring more senior people on board, get more people to kind of make those decisions, and unfortunately the individual had to like reduce in importance or responsibility. And that then I was just like, you know what, I feel like I've got what I had to, like now it's a good time to let this go and try something else. So it was a very like happy No complaints, no big fight has happened. Yeah. I'm good. I did my like best here. I've left a mark. They say even now sometimes they say, oh no, PP would have written this in some document, go check it.
Nice. Would you ever go back to working at cred?
Yeah, I could. Maybe I would, but because I understand so much about that company, it'll be interesting for me to see how much it's changed, what I should expect, not expect. My best manager of my entire life was at Cred. Like, I just really appreciate and thank that guy, who still mentors me on. So really, like, genuinely, a lot of really, really good things at Cred. But I feel like it was like a good ending. You know, it ended when it had to.
Someone should start a podcast with the people who work at Cred. I think that would be an interesting podcast. Seems to be like a lot of interesting people.
It really worked.
Okay, so you left Cred. This is what, almost a year and a half ago now?
Actually, yeah, year and a half. That's right.
Nice. And you've been doing a bunch of different things. Your voice, what you said. I've been doing a bunch of odd jobs. That's what it is. Odd jobs. A little bit of everything. Talk to me about what the last 6 months have been. Now, I think it seems to be a bit more like structured. You're doing like, you know, helping people with pitch decks, you're helping people with strategy. But you started off doing things like choreography, you wanted to be able to dance, babysitting, you said. Did you ever babysit people, really? So I'm most curious to know about, you left Cred, you wanted to try something new. What was going through your mind? And at what point did you go from, well, let me just try anything and everything, to now, which seems to be, I think you've made some progress towards,
yeah,
I have customers. I know, like, I don't really want to do fintech, but fintech is coming to me. It's very different from, you know, am I just to babysitting?
Yeah. Actually, post-grad, I did have two more jobs, which were very quick in and out. Answered the 2-3 other questions about, do I want to do fintech? Do I want to do product? Do I want to do this, that? In my last job, I was actually selling credit cards and loans. Effectively, I was a marketing person for that. Which, like, what am I doing with my life? I don't care about this. So I think I went into the zone of, okay, if I don't do this, then what? Yeah. Because clearly leaving this and joining another company is not the answer. Like, they all of them can't be the problem. I'm changed. 3 companies I've changed in a year. It's like a little bit me also. So
actually, if I can pause you there.
Yeah.
Do you think your standards are too high?
Yeah.
Or do you think your expectations are a bit unrealistic?
Okay.
And I'll explain to you why I'm asking that question later.
Yeah. Okay. Are my standards too high? No. Are my standards high? Yes. Get it? There's no two. Are my expectations unrealistic? No, because I found my reality where these expectations are working. So it's okay. My expectations were unrealistic for a set up corporate zone kind of a model, which I realized. So now I'm out of it.
I see.
So it's fine.
Got it.
So I don't think it's unrealistic. Yeah. But to expect that in that office and to be like, no, as a founder, as HR or whatever, make my life awesome. No, it's not going to happen. It's fine.
Yeah. I feel a lot of people right now where, you know, they've reached some level. I think the big question you sometimes, or at least I sometimes struggle with, is this an unrealistic expectation?
Or
is my situation just bad, right? And trying to find the right balance is sometimes, at least I find it quite hard, because sometimes then you really think about, it's like, you know what, the problem is not the external. The problem is that you just have wrong expectations. Like, you have to revise your expectations of what you are doing, or like what, you know, a certain job is, what a certain city is, what a certain person is. And I feel like expectations, like bad expectations, are at the core of a lot of our problems. But at the same time, I think not having that attitude that I will just settle with whatever is, you know, served for
me.
Exactly. Yeah.
But here's my take on that, right? I feel like if you have those expectations, so have those expectations for yourself, like the desires for yourself, but be real about what you're expecting from other people. Like, I can't expect a company to, for example, be okay with me working from home every day. But do I want to work from home every day? Yes. But they're 2 separate pieces. So it's okay for me to want to work home, but I cannot expect this from this person or the city or this company. So that division, I think, helps, because no one should settle, man. Like, everyone should, like, get to what they want to get to.
That's a good way of looking at it. Like, having high expectations of yourself, or like for yourself, but not having very high for like things you can't control.
I guess
that's a good balance. But anyway, so you figured out, you had certain expectations. Your job was not going to give it to you them. So you decided, you know, let's pull the plug. Let's change. Let's not be in a job.
Yeah. So it started off with, okay, if I don't do this, then what do I do? Okay. It was very simple. If not this, then what? And I'm like thinking, okay, I don't want to go to this company. Do I want to do marketing, product? Because suddenly everything is in the open. Do I want to do strategy? Do I want to go back consulting? Should I go back to BCC? Like everything is happening in my head. And I was like, okay, you know what? First, actually, it was a very nice conversation with my dad that convinced me to quit, where he just said to me, he said, listen, basically, I was sitting telling him how I want to open a shop. I was like, maybe I'll open a shop for pets, and then the pets can come and do this, and then they can become friends and some. And then I was like, you know, can I just say something? Because you're such a dynamic person and you're always full of so much energy. And I don't know what it is you've been doing for the past 2 years, but it's gone. Like that energy has somehow disappeared. And when you're talking about it right now, it's coming back. So can you just think about this? And I was just like, yeah, you know what? I want to quit, but I don't know what I want to do. He's like, it's fine, then quit. And I was like, no money. How will I make money? How will I do this? How will I do that? He's like, first of all, you've saved a lot of money, so you're okay. And it's not like, it was so funny because when I talk to people about quitting my job and how I'm like freelancing or consulting now, apart from there are 3 to 4 very commonly asked questions, one of which is, how did you convince your parents? And I'm like, my parents convinced me that I should quit. So, but yeah, it was that. And then I did this very fun thing because I make a list of everything. I made an Excel sheet on which I said, okay, what can I do? Anything. And it was a combination of things that I know I'm good at. For example, choreography. Can I do Sangeet choreography? It was things that I want to do, but like, I don't know if I'll be able to do it. Like become a therapist, become a bartender, start a podcast. You know, it's all there. And then there were a bunch of other things which are like really proper startup ideas. A startup which does this. So it's this really nice long list of like 60, 70 things. And then I bucketed them into like, this will make money. This is fun, but it won't make money. This is going to require a lot of hard work. I just started like playing around with it. And then when I looked at that list, I was like, yo, dude, I'll do something. Matlab, hardly will I do nothing. It's fine. Something will happen from this. So basis that, I decided to like quit. I was just like, I'm not being utilized to the best of my abilities. I'm not a 5. I need to be a 5. So can I go be a 5 somewhere else? And there are stressors around it, right? Like money and things. Yeah. So I had my way of dealing with it, which is I came up with like a base amount that I need every month. I just bought a car. So suddenly I have an EMI that I'm paying and things like that. So I was just like, okay, I need this much money per month. From my savings, I'll take out this much. So this is my personal runway. So in 6 months, if I can't break even, then I'm going to go back to a full-time job. I'm fully broke even in 2 months. So I was like, okay, life is awesome. Continue.
Wow. Yeah. So you did put in a lot of thought and you did all of this stuff before you actually took the plunge.
Yes. Yeah. There was kind of setting a little bit of a safety net and a base, like having some idea of what, but not having the exact idea. A lot of people I talk to, they're just like, oh, I want to do exactly this.
Yeah.
Which is fine if you have that much clarity. But if you don't and you're still questioning it, it's okay to have like 10 options and figure out along the way, I think. Got it. Yeah.
Interesting. We come to a bit in like the stuff you're doing, but I wanted to take a bit of a sidetrack. What have you learned about money? I think through a lot of us, through our 20s, I think have an interesting evolution of our relationship with money. I'm curious to know.
1,000%.
What have you learned about money over the last 5 to 7 years?
I think, see, at Bain, we were probably for our age group, one of the higher paid set of people, right?
Yeah.
So at that, like, I still remember the day my account crossed 1 lakh. I was so excited. I was like, wow, 1 lakh in my account. Oh my God, so cool. So, you know, that joining bonus or something had come and I was like, oh my God, I have 1 lakh.
Correct.
In the last 5 to 6 years, I feel like I realized that there is a base lifestyle that I want for myself, which is a nice house. I now have a car. I want to go out. If I want to go out, like, you know, on a weekend, and spend 5,000 rupees on a dinner, if I want to travel to a different country, blah, blah, blah. There are certain things which I've kind of outlined. So as long as those things are happening, I'm good. So what I'm trying to get at is, for me, I realized there's a baseline amount of money that I want. Anything over and above that is like a good to have. And I'm very like, okay, great. That's a bonus. Now, that's a very idealistic and happy approach. Here's the sad part about what I feel about money. Every time I hear about how much my friend or someone as old as me is making, and if it's more than me, I feel like shit. Like, no matter how much I try to rationalize it to myself about, oh, it's because of this, 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 but I do feel like shit. And then I figure that, hey, you know, like, that girl is feeling bad that she's not earning 15 lakhs more, and that the person who is earning 15 lakhs wants more and more. So it's infinite growth that way. But basically what I'm trying to get at, it's like, it's this really weird space of, it doesn't matter to me, because from a use case perspective, it matters to me from like a status or how I perceive myself or success perspective. I'm not actually going to use 5 crores a month or a year, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Interesting. Yeah. Plus one to that.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's like, you also realize that, you know, like, money is like one axis, and then you think, you know, you have time and you have health and you have, you know, flexibility of time.
Yeah.
Which is very hard to measure. I think money is the easiest way to measure. And, you know, yeah, I sometimes find myself rationalizing, and, you know, I rationalize myself pretty well that, oh yeah, yeah, my job doesn't pay me the most, but, you know, it is flexible. Tomorrow, if I got to take off, I could take off. Right. And I wouldn't be like stressed about it. Very hard to quantify, but yeah, I will not disagree to the fact that I'm like, what the fuck? Like, people my age who started off at the same place earn 3 times as me. Like, what the
exactly.
fuck?
Exactly.
Like, where did exactly. I go wrong, right?
Exactly. Always.
Yeah.
Always.
Interesting. Have you thought about like a number for yourself? Like your destination number?
Yeah. At least for... Like, I feel like for me, it's a easy number. Because it's the next round figure, right? There was a point where I was like, I want to earn 10 lakhs. Then there was a point where I want to earn 50 lakhs. Now the next round figure is a crore. So I'm like, okay,
yeah.
At what point am I earning a crore a year? But while it's a number...
So for you, your number is how much you earn, not how much, like, you have in the bank. Or, like, everything else put together.
Yeah, it's no. It's, I think that's the Marwari in me. Like, for me, it's like a... How much am I don't know if it's a Marwari me, but whatever, like, it's a how much am I, because I said, right, for me it's not the use case of the money. Yes. See, and again, I come from a very like investment heavy family. My dad's an investment advisor. All my money has been invested somewhere. So at any given point in time, I have to call him up and say, okay, how much money do I have? What's my net? So when I was making all this decision, I had to be like, can you tell me how much money I have? Because I don't know how much I can take out. And it's very like spread out. So I won't say I'm the best at managing the overall financial thing, which I should, but I don't. But yeah, like, to answer your question, it's about like how much I earn and where I'm at. Again, to make myself feel better. Do I need the money? No. I'm perfectly happy right now.
Like, do your friends know how much you have in the bank?
No, they don't know how much I have in the bank. A bunch of people have asked me how much of credit swaps I have though. But I think there are very specific people that I do discuss a monthly like bucket. For example, right now, if I'm earning like X amount, I'm just trying to figure out, okay, how do I make it Y or Z? But what I'm trying to get at is, it's not a thing that I'm obsessing over. Okay, let me rephrase. A lot of people are usually, from a career perspective, optimizing for money, right? Yeah. Most people. Or they'll be optimizing for, let's say, a designation or a job role. Right now, I'm at a phase where I honestly started optimizing for happiness. It's like what you said. I have flexibility. I don't want to work on Monday. I won't work on Monday. It's fine. And somehow in this effort to optimize for happiness, money just came. So I'm like, this is great. So what I'm trying to say is, it's not the primary factor anymore. Which is why even when I'm discussing with my friends, the conversation is more like, hey, so I want this to go from like 2 lakhs to 5 lakhs. So like, you know, do you have a suggestion on like, should I change my rates? But just that, not how much money do you have and I have.
Interesting. Yeah, I think a lot of our decisions in life are so centered around like money, on, you know, the jobs we do, and as a result, the jobs we do, you know, the lifestyles we live, where we move to. But yet I feel like people just like do this on their own silo. Like they never like talk about the money. And I mean, I don't know how important it is for people to talk about money. But I think, or like, I wonder what would happen, like if all, and I think it's harder to do with parents and, you know, like family. I think that's a bit weird, but like people who are your peers, who all are probably have the same stress, who all have the same questions. And the irony of it all is, deep down, it actually doesn't matter how much money each of us have.
It doesn't.
Right? Because we will still be friends. Like if you went broke, or if you, like your net worth went up 100x, I don't think our friendship would change that much. So while much easier said, harder, much easier said than done. But I do wonder if, like what would happen? It's also like a one-way bridge. Like once you cross that bridge and, you know, as you said, if my friend, like say, for example, Chuck and me, Chuck tells me, oh, you know, this is what I have in the bank. And maybe it's like 100 times I have, right? I mean, that's a bridge we can't go back from.
Exactly.
Now, like, would it, like, does it change our friendship? Of course not. Would each of us be better that, you know, we can maybe confide each other with one of the biggest stresses of our life? I think yes. But yeah, I think it's one of those one-way things which, I don't know, somebody got to take that risk and tell me if that risk is worth it. But anyway, cool. We talked about money. Let's go back to the stuff you're doing. So maybe just very quickly, what kind of stuff you're working on right now, and what would you like for that to look like in, say, 6 months from now?
Yeah. So I know I kept saying odd jobs, but it's actually that. Okay. So here's what happened. We were trying to answer questions around, do I want to be a product manager? Do I want to do marketing? Do I, you know, fintech startups? The conclusion I reached was I don't have to pick one thing. Like for a while, can I just do a little bit of everything and figure it out? So what I'm doing right now is I go up to people, especially founders, and say, I'm going to solve problems for you. It can be a very, very big problem. It can be a very, very small problem. But you yourself can't solve every problem. So there are certain things you can outsource. And here's why you can outsource them to me. Because I'm not like your run-of-the-mill freelancer who's coming and saying, oh, I'm a content writer or I'm a digital marketer. I am someone who is a generalist. And I right now have management consulting experience. I have product experience. I have marketing experience. I have startup experience. So I've lived in like kind of been in the situation that a lot of the people in your team are in. So I do probably understand the context better. And I think I can help. So I do, for example, a lot of strategy consulting projects. Like one of my clients right now, their one category dance wasn't doing well. So I've been trying to work with them to make that category do better. For someone else, it's a lot of social media, Instagram. For someone else, it's like a brand revamp. For a lot of people, it's pitch decks. Can you make a deck? I've made actor profiles. I've made a CV for someone. Actually, multiple people now. So it's a very, like, if someone says, I need someone for this, I look at it in isolation. I'm like, is this a task I can do or a problem I can solve? If yes, I just sign up for it. So there's no real title or domain. Sure, I'm good at marketing or I enjoy marketing, but broadly... The other day, someone said, I need someone to code HTML, like code emails into HTML. I was like, I'll do it. But here's the thing. You don't have to do everything yourself. I take up so much work and then I simply find good, better people to do it. And then I'm just like the middle person. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
How do you figure how much to charge?
That's actually a great question. It took me a while to figure that out. I did two to three things. One is I came up with how much money I think I should earn in a month. And then came up with an hourly rate for it. And then I said, okay, approximately my 1 hour is approximately worth this much. And then the second thing I did is I came up with a base rate that, hey, if it's a project that requires like 10 to 12 hours per week, I'm not going to take it up unless it's, let's say, paying me a lakh or a lakh and a half. I'm just not going to take it. And I'm giving you the numbers so that it like helps if, you know, anyone's listening and they're trying to figure it out for themselves. You just come up with like a base rate and say, okay, this is my non-negotiable. of course, on occasion, there are some really sweet founders and I'm like, okay, I love what you're trying to build, so let's do it. Or on the other hand, there are people that I just don't like, and then I'll quote like a really high number. So if I convert, then great, because I'm getting paid so much that I don't mind doing it. So the point is, it's beautiful, right? Because the arbitrage in this is crazy. I can do the exact same job for two people and charge them two completely different amounts. And it's fine.
Do people haggle with you?
Very rarely. Very, very rarely. Oh, because so I took some time to come up with these rates, right? For example, a founder who has even a little bit of funding is okay paying a lakh a month, because it's not so much that they're like, oh my God, I'm paying this girl so much money. And it's not so little that I'm unhappy. So like this 1 to 1.5 lakhs is like a good bucket. And similarly for like presentations and stuff, the first one, maybe I'll charge you like 20,000, 30,000. Can you imagine? 30,000. And then if you like keep coming back to me and you'll be like, hey, listen, can we do 5 next month for like 15,000? I'll be like, theek hai. So not too much haggling, honestly. It's been chill that way.
And how do you go about like managing expectations? Because all of this seems to be like, it can be like scope creep. It's like, oh, this is not what I expected. Like, does that happen often?
Yeah. So for that, I figured out a few things. One, and again, like, God bless Nikita Narona. I mean, shout out for helping me like get on this path. But so there's this like concept of like a scope of work document. And so I always put that down.
Definition of done.
Yes. So it's not like legal jargon or things like that, but it's very simple. It'll be like, okay, this is a summary of the problem. It's literally one page usually. And here are like the 5 things I'm going to deliver to you. Now, sometimes they're very specific, like 10 Instagram posts per month. Sometimes it's vague, like a core proposition of the brand. Sometimes it could be vague like that. But I try to outline as much as I can whatever I already know with the information that I have, that okay, and then phase one we'll do this, phase two, phase three. The other thing that I do is there's a lot of communication and like weekly meetings and stuff. So and it's like a large-ish strategy project. I tell them that, listen buddy, the first week, that is, we're only going to outline how we're solving this, so that kind of stuff. And if it's a presentation or a pitch deck that I'm making, instead of making the deck, I first send them 5 templates. I say, here are 5 templates with like 2 to 3 samples. Can you tell me which one you like? And basis that feedback, then I'll just send them 5 slides. Then I'll send them the full deck. So there are ways to like break it down and solve it. Of course, there are times when they're just like, this is not what I expected. But I usually hear that very early on, so I have time to post correct versus deal with it at the end. So it's working.
So fascinating. What do you envision this looking like in 6 months from now?
I'm really, really hoping that I can actually formalize this a little bit more. So it's very interesting that I actually have on and off hired people to work for me, right? Like I did have someone who was a full time with me for a couple of months and things like that. 6 months, 8 months down the line, I want this to be like a full fledged problem solving agency of sorts. Like come to us with any problem and we'll solve them. What I'm realizing now, it's been about 6-7 months of doing this, is that I can't do everything, right? I only have a certain number of hours in the day. And if I want to scale this and grow this, I need to start building a team of some sort that can do a lot of this as well as I can, which is so funny because I never thought of myself as someone who's going to start something. But this seems like a fun thing for me to start. And also, like, now I understand that manager's dilemma, right? Like, it's very hard to trust someone to do the work as well as you do it, or to give them an open, and they'll come back with a fully different approach, which could also work, especially in marketing, so subjective, no? And then to be like, but I had thought this, and then but that's my next 6 months is looking like that for me, like taking a decision on formalizing this, actually registering it as a company, hiring people, doing all of that, because I want this to grow. I'm having too much fun with it. My clients said, no, there's fintech, there's education, there's a music school, there are actors and sports people, there's event management, there's just, it's everything. There was an architecture firm, a legal firm based in Dubai, like language company in Chile. Like,
how do they even find you?
How do they find?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn is one. Yes. I would say LinkedIn is about maybe 20-30% of my leads. Some cold reach out, some people who just knew me in the back of beyond. But otherwise, honestly, a lot of word of mouth, because I'm very active in a bunch of these WhatsApp groups and things. So when people are like, hey, we need an agency to do this, is this, like I said, if it just looks like a problem I can solve, I don't look at it as a, this is what I do. I look at it as like, is this a problem I can solve? If yes, I immediately ping them. So that, and I did, there were a few things. I made like this sweet little message and this one pager, sent it out to like 5-6 founders and VC people. They sent it to someone. So aaj aa raha kaam. Like touch wood, getting work hasn't been a problem. In fact, right now my problems, I want to take on more and I can't, which is why the hiring and all of that I'm trying to figure.
People are listening to this and they want to help you in some certain way. What do you think people can do to help you get to that end goal?
Of course, if you've understood what I'm doing, please reach out and give me work. That's a very direct way. But
you just said you there's more work than you can't take on more work.
No, I know. But we'll figure. No, what you could help me with is I have gathered a lot of perspective just talking to people, you know, in different phases of life, whether it's like a... So this is my philosophy, and I was telling someone this who was trying to get into freelancing and consulting. I was like, if I had to give you one piece of gyan, no? The gyan is talk to everybody. At any point, if someone has pinged you saying, hey, can we chat? It could be someone who wants advice. It could be like a very lullu looking company that you don't want to work for. It could be a batchmate, whoever it is. Have that conversation with everyone. So, and in that conversation, there's going to be a lot of things you realize and you learn. And mostly, it's going to be different from what you think it will be. So if someone wants to help me and make this happen, just reach out and let's talk, you know, because I want to know what's going on. The point of doing all of this is I suddenly have exposure into so many different companies, people, industries. I just suddenly know so much more about what's going on. So I want to know more. So call me.
I put PP's phone number in the show notes. Yeah. But you can find her LinkedIn and Instagram in the show notes.
Yes.
Okay, we've been at this for a while.
Yes.
When you look back over the last decade, is there any shift in belief you've had? And by that, I mean something you believed very strongly maybe a decade ago, but now you see yourself taking like a 180 degree shift in that.
I think, okay, basically being okay with rejection or failure, like that's been a really big one, because for the longest time it was like if you don't pass in this exam, your life, but forget pass, if you don't get 99% in this exam, your life sucks. If you don't get a 5 at Bain, your life sucks. If you don't get into the B school of your dream, your life sucks. If you launch a product and it doesn't hit the numbers it's supposed to, your life, like there was a lot of like, if something doesn't work out, you've suddenly gone 10 steps back. For me, a really big shift has been like becoming okay with things not working out, being rejected or failing at something, because now I've started telling myself that it's a thing about like a fitment, like A and B were not a match, so it didn't work out, which is why you weren't as good at it. Like me and maybe being a product manager, or maybe me and being a consultant was not a match, which is why it wasn't working out. And I don't look at those as failures at all, by the way, but like today when I give an interview, the first time I got rejected at an interview, I cried for 3 days because I never got rejected. But now if I pitch to someone and it doesn't work out, they ghost me. Or if someone is not happy with my work, it's fine. It's really not the end of the world. So I know I spoke a lot about how work is part of my identity, but the point is to reduce that. That's happening a lot more because I don't take these like failures or rejections personally. So that's been a big shift.
How do you think you would have arrived at all of this if not for therapy?
No. Maybe half of it. See, a lot of the things that I've mentioned are very crystallized thoughts that are not thoughts that came in therapy. It's not like this rejection point I discussed in therapy, but over time, therapy just made me think more clearly and made me understand why I do what I do, or why I'm thinking, or why I'm feeling what I'm feeling. And it's been a year or 2 years now of like me working towards clarity in a lot of ways, personally, professionally, all of that. So the way I'm being able to articulate a lot of this right now is because I've spent time actually thinking about it. Not in therapy by myself, but the therapy helped me figure it out.
Yeah, and so, I don't mean that all of this is like because of therapy, but I just feel, or what I'm trying to say is that I think like therapy has, you know, now of course it's much more commonly talked about. A lot of people who listen to this podcast and who've been on it like do not go. And I think it's still at that point wherein there is a lot, it's like going to the gym, right?
Yeah.
I think people need to view therapy as just going to the gym. And again, it's easy said than done. I do not go to therapy yet. But I do feel that it does help you on this journey, which of course it will not solve the problems for you. I think it can only be an enabler. But it's curious. It's interesting to see people who go to therapy have so like just you're just much more clear. You're much more like centered.
Exactly.
And again, and this is not to say this is because of therapy. It's, I think these people do the work, but it's a lot of good forcing function to help you do that work.
1000%, and it takes time. Like if again, and I can say this very honestly, I've now been going for therapy for almost 7 or 8 years. Very on and off, but in totality, like I, like you started startups before startups were cool. I started therapy before therapy was cool, and I'm really happy I did. I think I would not be the person that I am today. There's a certain amount of calmness or centeredness. Sure, sometimes even I'm a mess, but there's a certain amount of centeredness and just being okay with myself.
Yeah,
that has happened. So I encourage it.
Is it common among your friends and in Bangalore for people to go to therapy?
With women, yes. Men, not so much. But I think it's slowly becoming. But long way to go. But it's talked about more, you know. I don't think people hide it as much. The first, like, 4 or 5 years, I never said anything to anyone. Now I'm all like, everyone should go for therapy. Big pro-therapy movement here. So
yeah, man. I think one of the biggest takeaway I have from this conversation is, you know, therapy would be a good advertisement on Ruby.
I agree.
Damn. Ask your therapist if she wants to sponsor the podcast. Sorry. Two pieces of advice you would have for 19-year-old PP.
Oh, wow. I would say, one, do not take life decisions which are revolving around getting married. If there are things you want to do, do them. Don't wait for like, I need a partner and once I get married, then I'll do this. This is why I'm not doing this because I want to get married in the next 2 years. No decisions should be made basis marriage or finding a partner. And I think the second one would be about like, just do things you love. Like in the sense, if you love to dance, keep dancing. And, you know, if you love to read, keep reading, because everything else will figure itself out. Like, don't give up on the things that you love for things like job and career and all that. Like, find that balance, become a whole human being, basically, and not a one-dimensional person.
Were you making decisions around like marriage?
Yeah, so many. My MBA decision, I do. Come on, Ruben, I could have gone to the US also, right? Everybody from Bain goes. I didn't go because there was a full conversation around, no, if you go when you're, we did the maths at home and they were like, but if you go when you're 26, then you'll come back, you'll finish by 28, then you'll work for 2 years. So when will you get married? How can you get married at 30? And now I walk up to them and like, ha, I'm 31 and I'm not married. Joke's on you. So that kind of stuff, or let's say buying my car, right? Or even at home. And if you talk to a lot of, I don't know about boys, but for a lot of the single women who are in this 30 range, there are a lot of things, like you don't feel fully settled. Like now I know what you mean by settled down. Get it? My home does not feel like my home. I love it. I'm very happy here, but constantly in my mind, I'm like, this is not it. There's another home coming, which is actually going to be my home. Or the car, I wouldn't have bought it right now. I would have done it later. You know, let me get all this sorted, then we'll do all of that. But now I'm like, bro, screw it. You want to buy a car? Buy a car. You want to go to Argentina? Go to Argentina. You want to quit your job? Quit your job. Just do these things. Stop waiting for a partner. Yeah, but I did make a lot of decisions around that. Yeah. Stupid PP.
Well, evolving PP.
Yeah.
Okay, before we wrap up, Man, this has been a good start to season three, I must say. What after all the questions I've asked you, you get to ask me one question. What do you have for me?
Yes, I want to ask you that. Okay, I'm going to ask you about the podcast, right? So, if you could have like one person that you don't know, and it can be anyone, like a celebrity or some fictional character or whoever, if you could have like one person on the podcast that you get to talk to for like an hour, who do you talk to? And they'll be very honest with you, by the way. They're going to be like super, like, it'll be like a therapy session for them, get it? So you can find out everything you want to know. Who will you talk to?
I feel like I'm interviewing at CRED.
I mean, come on, the instinctive answer is the honest answer. What's the first name that came to your
Pope.
Mind?
The Pope. Yeah.
Yeah?
Fun. Yeah. If he'd be 100% honest.
Exactly.
I would say the Pope.
That'd be a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll try to get you the Pope.
I mean, I really don't want. I mean, so first of all, I think to caveat it that I like talking to like famous people is cool, but I don't think those would be very fun conversations because like they'd just be like, you know, we have nothing to talk about, right? Or we like they do enough podcasts, whatever.
Yeah.
The reason, like, for selfishly, I would like to talk to the Pope is like, I don't know if you're religious or not, but. I'm like, for me, like this whole thing of religion is like, I'm going through like ups and downs of it, of, like realizing it, like, you know, it being quite important, then realizing it's like a bunch of stories. Then you realize that even though it is stories and even though it might not be factually true, it still plays a very, very important role. So my hypothesis is that Pope has all of this pretty clear. Like the Pope knows that, you know, I would imagine that he would say that, you know what, Ruben, all of this is, of course, not true. Like, can you show me like the numbers? Like, why are there 10 numbers?
Yeah.
Like, why is there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9? Like, why was there nothing beyond 9, right? We just, everybody agreed and it works.
Yeah.
Similarly, like, that's what religion is. Okay. So let's not kid ourselves. You know, you don't have to go crazy. And then this is the, you know, the entire organization, like this entire, you know, whatever superstructure we've created. And we have to keep it running, right? If you don't keep this running, like, there'll be anarchy. So that's the conversation I would like to have. And just in my mind to be like, oh, so this is it. This is what religion truly is, right? And I think the irony of that conversation is it should not be public. Because I think once you, you know, look inside the kimono, then it's like, oh, shit, like, you know. That's the weird thing about religion. Like, once you see the truth, it's very hard to, for it to...
go back.
Yeah, and for it to actually serve that purpose, right? Like, for example, religion, I think, is very valuable. Like, you land up in a new city, you can just go to the church, you have a community instantaneously, right?
Yeah.
But if you go to the church and be like, hey, you know what? I'm actually here because I love the community. But you know what? I actually think you guys are stupid. You think you believe that this guy actually, like, was there?
Yeah.
I don't believe that. That's not going to work, right? So, anyway, that's my slightly long answer to the short question of who I would like
to. Nice. Maybe speak. Nice. Yeah, I think the Pope's a good one. A lot of people would want to talk to the Pope. So. Nice.
Yeah. Like, how does he see Christianity or like just any religion be around for the next 100 years? Like, what form would it be?
What do you see about Christianity for, you know, 6 months from now? It'd be fun.
Yeah. Like, where do you think it's going to be? Anyway, okay. So, with that, I think we will wrap up this episode. Maybe people want to keep up. Best way to get in touch? Instagram, LinkedIn?
Yeah. Instagram or LinkedIn, both. I'm pretty active on both. So, it's just my full name. So Priyanshi Kota.
Yeah. You'll find all the notes in the show notes, and she's based in Bangalore. So if you're around, you should hit her up.
100%.
And that is it. Thanks again for making time to do this.
Awesome. Yeah. I had a great time. Thank you so